Chapter 16. An aide ushered Luke into Corduro Vice Director Durgard Braren's sumptuous office. Lit by crisscrossed strips on the ceiling and walls, its focal point was a decorative air circulation grill. Other black grills reached from floor to ceiling in freeform designs. At the room's front was a narrow counter, like something out of a tap calf. A lone Duros sat behind it. The triangular Corduro insignia on his right breast had a gold edging. Gray-green skin hung in folds under his chin. Over his ears, his hairless scalp was turning pale. He stood to greet the pair of imitation Kubas.
"Gentles, how may I serve you?"
Luke wasn't sure what information might be available. He meant to convince Vice Director Braren that he and Anakin were harmless, trying to bluff their way into dangerous circles. It mattered more than ever that he succeed. Everything mattered more now. He was helping to shape the future in which his child would grow up. In his best Kubaz whir-overlaid basic, he said, "Many of our people are homeless. We have set up a colony on Yagdul, but we need supplies. I was told there were basic goods to be bought here. For a price." The Duros reached toward his countertop.
"The price could be more than you wish to pay, gentles," he said.
Two large humans appeared from behind a brown wall screen. Luke recognized the determination in their eyes, then the hopelessness behind it. He'd seen that mixture before. In Peace Brigade collaborators, humans who were already convinced the Yuuzhan Vong would win this war. That was an unwelcome complication. Had Corduro been corrupted? Or had Thrinny Vey vanished because she detected collaboration on an even wider scope? A second thought hit him like an ion cannon blast, disrupting his other thoughts. Were the Yuuzhan Vong already targeting Duro? And were these their advance agents? He scrambled to regain his composure. "We are prepared," he whirred, "to offer New Republic credits, Kubindi bonds redeemable off-world, or—" A tone sounded through the room, and their host straightened.
"One moment, gentles."
Braren touched something in front of him, eyed a readout, and half smiled. Luke sensed an urge to send the strangers away. He countered it subtly, suggesting that Braren perceive his Kubindi guests as neutral witnesses. After all, their world was already gone. Braren appeared to consider the new thought, then said,
"Gentles, please linger for a few minutes. I am reminded of a guest that my staff has kept waiting, so that he will know his place. I shall admit him now. Keep still, or your escorts will have to see you out."
"Gladly," Luke whirred, "for my people's sake." He gestured Anakin back toward the brown wall screen. As they backed away, Luke evaluated the big human guards again, commanding in size, but not devastatingly brilliant. They shouldn't present two Jedi much challenge if this came down to blows, which it shouldn't. Luke sensed Jason as he walked in, wearing a soft blue cap and a brown flight suit. To his deep concern, Jason neither probed nor reached out with the Force. In fact, Luke sensed a deliberate damping of the Force all around his elder apprentice, worse than before. He'd told Anakin that Jason must find his own path. He knew it with all his heart and mind, but seeing Jason like this hurt badly. Luke had made mistakes. He knew how painful the consequences might be, especially here and now. He stretched out and nudged Jason. Jason had spent most of the last hour in an anteroom, waiting for the Vice Director to admit him. He'd tried to sit patiently and reflect on his vision. It hadn't exactly called him to diplomacy, but this didn't seem like a wrong path. Now, like an echo out of his vision, he sensed his uncle. There, one of the two Kubas in the corner, between muscular bodyguard types. The other Kubas was Anakin. From his uncle, he thought he sensed a nudge to get the Duros talking. Straightening, he faced Vice Director Brarin. What an opportunity. He could show his uncle and his brother the direction his vision and conscience and experiences were taking him.
Jedi Jason Solo.
The Vice Director, like other Corduro employees, wore a red-trimmed brown flight suit.
This is unexpected.
Thank you for... Jason stepped toward the desk.
Stop, the Duros said. That's close enough.
Jason halted. Did Brarin want him standing on this exact spot? Testing, he edged sideways. The Vice Director didn't object. He deduced that the Duros wasn't trying to stand him over or under a greenie trap, but was simply frightened of Jedi and trying to protect himself. Sir, I'm here on behalf of some very needy people. The refugees inside my mother's dome...
She is Leia Organa Solo. Correct?
Jason's ear for accents and languages had almost adjusted to the Duro's tendency to gargle their R's. Yes, sir. Those refugees are living under unbelievably primitive conditions. They...
Where are your Jedi robes, Jason Solo? Are you here as an infiltrator?
No. Jason spread his hands. Not at all. The Duros pointed a long, knobby hand down at Jason.
Your supply problems are not our concern. Perhaps Selkor is shorting you.
Why would Selkor do that? The Duros shrugged eloquently.
Why not? Selkor decided for us that we wanted our planet reclaimed.
He raised a hand before Jason could answer.
We were consulted, but only nominally.
Why is this a problem? Jason asked. Don't you want it habitable down there?
We, the Vice Director said, are content with our roots pulled free. That sphere of stone once anchored us. Its factories became places to send malcontents and gutter grubbers. Now those citizens are returning to our well-run cities, upsetting our social balances.
He tilted his long head.
And if you restore a habitable planet, the Yuuzhan Vong could choose to move in. If they do, the blame will rest solely on Selkor.
He shot a glance toward the Kubas. Jason shifted his feet on a deep, soft carpet. Sir, if our supply shuttles don't get through, people will start to go hungry. We need your help. It's urgent. The Duros reached for the edge of his counter. A high tone sounded. The door behind Jason swished open. Two armed Duros stalked in. What was this? Jason kept his hands lowered. Sir, I'm just asking for the chemicals we need to grow food. I have no intention of threatening you.
No?
The Vice Director asked.
Your enabling of Centerpoint Station, our near neighbor, changed the power balance in our region. Jedi make me nervous, especially young ones who use words like urgent. Often they don't have the maturity to know when to back down.
Thank you, Kip Duron, Jason muttered to himself. He hoped Anakin was paying attention. Sir, it was no Jedi who fired Centerpoint Station.
A new sentiment is spreading through the New Republic.
Surely, Brarin said,
you have heard the Jedi philosophy challenged.
I have, Jason admitted. most recently down at Port Duggan, when I arrived.
Ah,
he said,
you met my sister, Drusilla.
An eloquent speaker, Jason said, though the woman's philosophy might have come straight from the Yuuzhan Vong's propaganda offices. On second thought, they probably never bothered with subterfuge. Still, if Master Luke wanted information, this was going well. Now he needed to state his position. You have nothing to fear from me, Vice Director. You asked where I left my Jedi robes. At the moment, I have stood down from my status as a Jedi in training. The Duros bowed his long head and laughed bitterly.
Any Jedi whose mother is a Skywalker cannot stand down. Ever.
His red eyes glimmered.
It's time you learned that.
Jason clenched his hands at his sides. I'm learning to be my own man. Not just my mother's son. This time, the four guards laughed too.
All right, man,
the Vice Director said.
What is it you want to offer Corduro Shipping in exchange for this missing cargo?
You don't understand, Jason insisted. Those supplies belong to us. They were sent by Coruscant.
So really,
Brauren said,
you have come here to accuse my people of robbery.
Again, at the back of his mind, Jason saw the galaxy tip toward darkness. He spread his hands and backtracked. I have little to offer, he admitted. The Duros folded long, knobby hands on the bar desk's surface.
Well said, Jedi Solo. Now let me tell you some things. I am old enough to remember Emperor Palpatine. There was a human who could keep order. Maybe he carried some programs too far, such as trying to wipe out your kind. But I doubt that the Yuuzhan Vong would have stuck a tattooed toe into this galaxy if they arrived while he was in power.
Jason stood silently, wondering what else the Duros meant to tell him. Brauren seemed to have forgotten the two Kubas.
Some of our orbital cities retain drive units, he said, from the days when our ancestors first steered them into place. Our homes aren't locked to Duro. We could leave and take home with us.
In that case, Jason wouldn't put it past them to divert and stockpile refugee supplies, though they could not admit that publicly. In the face of a possible invasion, he said softly, you do have to consider your own people first. The Duros raised his head, then cocked it in surprise.
Exactly. What use would the Yuuzhan Vong have for mechanical habitats?
Jason straightened. At last, the Duros was listening, because instead of pushing his demands, Jason had sympathized. I agree, he said, but they destroy what they despise. There are things you don't know about the Yuuzhan Vong. I've even been their prisoner.
How did you get away?
Brauren demanded. Jason exhaled heavily. He looked down at the floor, then raised only his eyes. My uncle came for me. It had been spectacular. Since Master Luke was undoubtedly tracking his feelings, he sent a pulse of gratitude.
There, you see?
Brauren drew up taller.
Anyone whose mother is a Skywalker cannot stand down from being a Jedi.
I'm trying, Jason said. I am seriously trying to find out what I am, apart from all that. Brauren rubbed his gray-green thumbs together over his folded hands. I've seen terrible things, Jason continued. He related some of them. The slave taking, the preoccupation with pain. And death, he finished. We've seen them sacrifice whole shiploads of prisoners. We know it's sacrifice, not simply elimination. I've spoken with a woman who was also their prisoner. Danny Quee's sad face flitted through his mind. He hoped she was safe back on Coruscant. I don't think you'd be safe, even if you took these habitats to another world. They'd shoot to destroy your technology.
Is that a threat, Jedi?
No, Jason exclaimed. I'm trying to help you, Vice Director. To warn you, not threaten you. We have to stand together.
The old symbiosis dogma. Did you know that even as your water treatment settlement tried to become symbiotic with the Gateway Dome, Gateway was trying to develop more dependable water sources of its own and become independent of you? That was in your mother's weekly report.
He tilted his head triumphantly.
She, a Skywalker, was not working towards symbiosis at all.
We are interdependent, Jason insisted. Every settlement's work will contribute to making the surface habitable again. A bizarre idea drifted into his head. He wasn't authorized to do this, but... Vice Director, if we settlers, the first people of a new Duro, offered to pay a tariff, a percent of all future goods, would that help ensure delivery? Say, 2%? That seemed plenty generous. The Duros stared over his clasped hands. Jason held his breath. They both knew Jason wasn't authorized to offer this. If other settlements called this a betrayal, they'd come braying for Jason's blood, not the Vice Director's.
20.
Brarin waved one hand. Out of one corner of his eye, Jason saw those big human security guards relax. Too much. Jason felt increasingly awkward. His mother had authorized him to try diplomacy. But did that include giving away goods? Selcor negotiated with Corduro for delivery of supplies, Jason insisted. Your people are already being paid.
And you, the Vice Director said, have been sent to me as a negotiator. Fascinating.
He raised a finger, beckoning one bulky aide away from the two inoffensive Kubas.
Jedi Solo, I would like to continue these negotiations. Please consider yourself my guest for the time being, until I can contact your mother and Coruscant.
Did the Duros mean to hold him for ransom, or as a hostage? Or would Brarin really negotiate? Jason was glad there'd been witnesses in here, though no one could call them impartial. He couldn't wait to tell Master Skywalker about his vision, too. Finally, he might get some help settling his mind. I'll ask one condition, though. Brarin's brow ridge rose.
I do not believe you are in a position to set conditions.
Wait. Listen. Deliver all the supplies you contracted to take groundside, as long as I'm your guest. His uncle would like that, even if Anakin was too young to understand.
You have no way of checking that, Jedi.
Don't I? Jason looked hard into the Duros' large eyes. In fact, he didn't. But Brarin didn't know that. You must help us hold back the Yuuzhan Vong. If we can't maintain a strong front against them, they'll pick us off, one system at a time. They're already doing it.
We've heard that story, the Duros said, but he waved the second guard forward. Escort young Solo to my guest room, he said. Stay with him
outside in the hallway. I will speak with him later. Jason glanced toward the brown wall screen on his way out. Hope you got what you wanted, Uncle Luke, he thought, knowing his uncle would recognize only an unspoken query. One Kubaz barely nodded. The other turned away. Mara dropped her datapad on a console as she re-entered the rental unit. A quick check of both rooms confirmed that they were empty, and her practiced eye saw no sign that anyone else had entered. Sporting her new disguise around Buru, she'd had no trouble finding a Duros willing to talk, especially when she explained that she was afraid she'd wake up one morning to find Kuat pocked with refugee camps. The Duros merchant talked freely, sensing a potential convert. She recorded his philosophy on her datapad, pressing harder and deeper for clarification on doctrinal points. Finally, convinced by her eagerness, he promised to forward her the very latest word of wisdom, which should arrive in 2 days. At that point, her ear for intelligence pricked. How, she asked casually, could he know so exactly? He shrugged. That was always the day it arrived. Mara thanked him regally, departing with more information than he knew he'd given out. Without bothering to lose her costume, she sat down at the rental room's dataport and plugged in her pad. Minutes later, thanks to codes Ghent developed years ago for Talon Card, she was deep into Buru's communications bureau. Dozens of broadcasts always arrived on that day of the week. Out of those, she narrowed her possibilities to three that came from out-system, and one that arrived from the surface, an official report from Selkor's Gateway Dome, where research was conducted. Selkor, in its wisdom, still tried to keep the Duros duly impressed with the detoxification process. That source she could check quickly. She keyed up the most recent broadcast. On the surface, it was nothing more than a series of progress reports. Two toxic swamps seeded with reclamation organisms, three enclosures drained and plowed for planting, small mammals loosed on the grass prairie. That experiment hadn't turned out so well. Half died, and the other half showed no eagerness to nest and breed. She carried one of Ghent's decoding programs in her datapad. It was the matter of a minute to copy the transmission and run the program. She waited while it applied various codes to the program, coming up with only gibberish. Until it hit pay dirt. Her hair tail fell over her face as she leaned into the datapad. One of the dirt-down scientists had used an old Romamulian military code. Mara remembered the passionate, even illogical antagonism of the Romamulians' slain spiritual leader, Nomanor. Toward the end of this text, she even spotted some of the exact phrases that Duros orator had used at Duggan Station. She pushed away, tilting her chin to let the hair tail settle behind her head. Someone down at Gateway, a Duros, or someone else with reason to make trouble in the Duro system, had connections to Romamul, where she'd already heard this kind of rhetoric. The Jade Shadow had belonged to a spice merchant before Lando's refit droids installed its camouflaged armament. It would pass as a noblewoman's runner. As Kuati nobility, she ought to have at least one servant, but she couldn't always get what she wanted. She left Luke a message with R2-D2. Han's head and shoulders glimmered over a holoprojector in one of the Gateway admin building's offices. "Sounds exactly like Rhonda, crashing the comm office that way," he said. "Threaten him if you have to. He respects you."
"He used to," Jaina said. "For a while."
She shook her head. Now she just wished the hut would leave her alone. "Guess we shouldn't have let him sleep in our control shed. I shouldn't have even brought him along." Jaina shrugged.
"No, you did the right thing."
"Well, go warn him he's headed for permanent lockup. And then keep an eye on him. Keep him out of Leia's way.
Somebody tried to sabotage her mining laser last night.
Then I'll stay out of her way, too.
Jaina pulled her soft Selcor blue cap low, warmly covering her ears, and went out. She found Rhonda's tent quickly. Blubbering noises filtered through its blue walls. She pulled open the flap. Rhonda sat on his sleeping mat, holding a leathery ball in one little hand. He twitched that hand, as if to hide it, then thrust it forward, more forcefully. His blubbering and moaning shut off.
"Take it," he ordered. "I expected Ambassador Organa Solo, or her security people."
Jaina recognized the villip, her stomach wrenched. Rhonda, a spy? No wonder he'd been hanging out in the communication centers.
"How long have you been working for them?" she demanded,
holding herself ready to fend off an attack.
"I am not," the Hutt growled. "I asked to speak with them, hoping to negotiate on behalf of my people. They rebuffed me."
"When?"
Jaina took another step forward.
"When did you contact them?"
"Yesterday."
"Only once?"
"I swear it by my—"
"Oh, right, I believe you,"
she said, loading her voice with sarcasm.
"So that's why you tried to warn Senator Shesh there were Yuuzhan Vong on the way. Because you somehow found a villip somewhere inside Gateway Dome."
"The senator assured me that reinforcements will arrive shortly."
Jaina worked the tip of her thumb with one fingernail. If Jason was right, if Shesh wasn't to be trusted, then the woman would not lobby to send reinforcements. She might even report Rhonda to the Yuuzhan Vong.
"I made an error," the Hutt assured her. "Truly I did. But I have repaired it. Now—"
"Do you think anyone will believe that? Give me that."
Jaina snatched the leathery villip. That brought her momentarily chest to belly with the Hutt, close enough to catch a whiff of his fetid body odor. Clutching the stiff villip under one arm, she stalked out of the shelter and hustled toward the gray admin building.